This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 11th of March, 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 11th of March, which this week have been edited by Linda Vincent and Margaret Boyden. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Richards. The three main headlines this week are Designers Start Work to Rejuvenate King's Walk, The Square Closure Could Be Extended, and Future King Visits Statue and Library. So maybe now have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Which was Designers Start Work to Rejuvenate King's Walk. Architects have started work on the revamp of the King's Walk area in Winchester. London-based Studio Multi will oversee the temporary upgrade of the shopping arcade in the city centre, which in the long term is earmarked for demolition as part of the Silver Hill redevelopment. Led by Studio Multi, the team includes architects, landscape architects, lighting and graphic designers. The team was due to meet the tenants of King's Walk last week, a meeting heard. The City Council says the plans focus on improving retail frontages along Middlebrook Street and Silver Hill, finding an innovative use for the flank wall of the adjacent Friarsgate car park and creating opportunities to improve the open spaces and reduce antisocial behaviour, as recently reported in the Chronicle. The King's Walk area has also been in the news after the council decided to evict two long-standing businesses, Suki Market and Sunflower Emporium, because it said they did not fit into its vision for a creative quarter. Both stores have been given a stay of execution until May. The proposals are currently being worked up in detail by Studio Multi. They aim to present a design to attract more creative, independent businesses. The design will also encourage street artists and performers to activate the reconfigured public spaces in ways which are both engaging and entertaining for all those accessing King's Walk Arcade. The upgrade will be delivered through a meanwhile use application across an area covering some 1,770 square metres. This will revitalise the area in the short term, whilst a procurement process to appoint a development partner for the Central Winchester Regeneration, CWR, opportunity is underway. The delivery of the CWR opportunity will ultimately result in the transformation and improvement of a larger part of the city centre, including King's Walk, Friarsgate and Silver Hill. Studio Multi say its approach is focusing on decluttering outdated signage in King's Walk and introducing cleaner approach to wayfinding, rethinking the way in which the open spaces and courtyards in and around King's Walk are configured, including the removal of the existing perimeter walls and, where feasible, introducing a small stage for performers and new fixed and loose seating, replacing the existing solid doors to the rear entrances of shops along Silver Hill with glazed doors, repurposing an existing loading bay as an event space for gatherings, culture events and markets.
The square closure could be extended. A Winchester civic chief has approved closures of two thoroughfares after experiments, and one closure could be extended into a weekday evenings. Excuse me. The Broadway and part of Coldbrook Street were now permanently shut on Sundays for the street markets, and Great Minster Street and the Square will close at weekends. The square closure could now be extended into the weekday evenings, a decision meeting heard. Action will be taken against drivers and food delivery riders who ignore the closure and drive round the bollards on the square, including more CCTV and a permanent new traffic sign to stop illegal access. Confirming the closures, Councillor Martin Todd, portfolio holder for economic recovery, said he had a positive feedback about both. He thanked Council Officer Tracy Haskett for her work. It has helped businesses, cut traffic, improved air quality, a big win for the city which would not have happened without your hard work. Ian Tate, a former city councillor addressing the meeting, said food delivery riders continue to use the route. They can manoeuvre past the bollards and drivers now realise that they can negotiate on both sides of the bollards. But in general, the closure has benefited people living in Simmons and St Swithin streets, including the elderly residents of Christ Hospital Almshouses, said Mr Tate. Parking on the close has now reduced to with only the residents of Morley Cottage Almshouses using the space. Andy Hickman, head of the programme, said drivers on Great Minster Street are aware of that and are looking at ways of sorting it out. Ideally, we would have liked to have put a bollard on the footway, but there were underground cables. A smaller signpost will make it impossible for cars to go round the bollard. On food delivery, we all know the company involved. We know they are undertaking the activity, and the company's structure is bizarre, and it is difficult to find someone to talk to.
Our future king visits the statue and library. Winchester welcomed Prince Charles with applause on Thursday, March the 3rd, as he arrived to officially unveil the Ark. The Prince of Wales revealed a commemorative plaque to mark the completion of a project which has seen the city's library undergo a £715,000 transformation. His Royal Highness also kept his promise to view the statue of Licorice of Winchester in front of what was a bumper crowd. Having previously had to withdraw from a scheduled visit in February after testing positive for COVID, he quickly allayed all fears of a second upset. However, when he stepped out of the back seat of his Jaguar, he was greeted by cheers from the crowd. Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, introduced him to a selection of local leaders, including MP Steve Brine and Mayor of Winchester, Vivian Archwell, before he set off down Jury Street to speak with delighted spectators. One of those spectators, Margaret Gregory, gifted Prince Charles with a bunch of flowers, and she said, "He spoke to me and asked me whether I picked them myself, which I had. He was so close I couldn't believe it." Winchester resident Elizabeth Reed, 72, was another who got a chance to speak with him, and she said, "He asked me if I was from Winchester and apologised for not being able to come in February. I told him he hoped he had recovered well, and he joked that he wasn't a very good advert for the vaccine." His Royal Highness returned to the statue, where Maggie Carver, chair of the Licorice Appeal, gave a moving speech. She said, "Licorice was a lone, remarkable, inspiring woman with a memorable name. She was also an opportunity to tackle the unfair prejudice that Jews had faced. Licorice, your bones have rested for 750 years in this city. We have brought you to life again for a special and inspiring purpose. You are seen walking towards your home on the opposite side of this very street. Welcome back. May you do much good." The Prince of Wales was in good spirits as he met the schoolchildren who helped unveil the statue on February the 10th and other trustees who campaigned for the statue's erection. Tony Stoller from Licorice Appeal said, "It's been a huge day for the Jewish community, for Winchester, for the statue, and for those of us who've been working on this for years. It's remarkable that Prince Charles was able to come back at such short notice. The fact that it matters to him is very important to us as well. Clearly, this is something he thinks is very important. He was very supportive, very interested, and very informed and impressed." In what was a day of dual celebrations for Winchester, His Royal Highness moved inside to the lobby of the Ark, where he officially unveiled the site formerly the Discovery Centre, following a speech from Hampshire County Council leader Keith Manns. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Keith Manns, said, "It's been a remarkable day, and I would like to thank everybody who turned out to join us here in Winchester to welcome His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales. It has been so uplifting to see people enjoying a special day together, helping to write a new chapter in the city's already rich royal history and creating an early high point in Hampshire's Platinum Jubilee celebrations." And the article is accompanied by some pictures of the local schoolchildren waving flags and all looking very excited to see His Royal Highness the Prince Charles arriving.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. We're going to continue shortly with death notices, then Christian comment, letters to the editor, there are nine of those this week, first person editorial comment, and then two pieces from Belgarum. First, the death announcements. Anderson, Jean Valery Anderson, on the 18th of February, aged 96. Beale, Maurice Robert, on the 24th of February, aged 93. Carter, Delia Ann D, nay Phippin Carter, on the 24th of February, aged 75. Coulson, Felicite Ann Coulson, on the 20th of February, aged 84. Cranmer, Janet Ann Cranmer, on the 28th of February, aged 83. Crudgington, Christopher John Crudgington, on the 17th of February, aged 67. Foot, Jennifer Mary, known as Jenny Foot, on the 25th of February. Fowler, Dr. Alan Edward Fowler, on the 16th of February, aged 94. Harfield, Cynthia Margaret Joy Harfield, on the 16th of February, aged 87. Hoare, June Hoare, on the 30th of January, aged 86. Jones, Anne Mary Jones, nay Ayres, known as Mary, on the 27th of February, aged 90. Pragnell, Edna May Pragnell, aged 92. Rackett, Gordon William Rackett, on the 19th of February, aged 92. Russell, Graham Russell, on the 5th of March, aged 87. Salter, Edward Ernest Salter, known as Ted, on the 22nd of February, aged 94. Which brings us then to Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is titled All Are Welcome, and it's written by Rosemary Baker. All are welcome. These words form the line of a well-known communion hymn. They also form the theme of the BBC Lent programmes this year. The official title of these is A Passion for Hospitality. The doormat in the photograph introducing the resources online for Radio 4 says, "You are welcome." So why hospitality? Hospitality towards strangers and those in need is a defining feature of the Christian life, and indeed many other religions. However, it is not straightforward. The theme runs through the Bible, being found in both the Old and New Testaments, and provides a clear call to love and welcome others. But from childhood, we are primed to fear strangers. Our divided communities reinforce the cultural barriers, and the global COVID pandemic has forced us to keep our distance. We have spent much of the last 2 years closing our doors to others. This BBC Lent series encourages us to consider the quality and nature of the welcome we offer to neighbour, friend, and stranger alike. For just over a week, the country of Ukraine has been invaded by Russia. Many of its citizens are fleeing to neighbouring countries to escape the bombing, deprivation, and consequent suffering. Some are seeking to travel further to other countries, where they have friends and relatives who can give them support and shelter. I'm sure I'm not supposed to be political in this column, but many of you will, like me, have been appalled to see and hear our own country's tardy and wholly inadequate response. I wonder how we can most effectively make our views known. Both my parents were very hospitable, and it was in this model that we were brought up. I can remember a young refugee from East Berlin coming to stay with us around 1960 for 3 months. A group of these children were brought over by the Winchester Round Table. She was considered nearer to me in age, and it was probably beyond my younger brother to be responsible for anyone else. So, she came to school with me. Yes, dear reader, to weak primary school. When bored, she would say she needed to go to the toilet. And once outside the classroom, she would suggest we went to the shops. Not that we ever did, but I learnt as much from her as she did from me. So, we are called to be welcoming and hospitable for others, and it's our natural inclination, not just because we are Christian or belong to some other faith. Many other countries are welcoming those fleeing, and until we can offer more, we can at least send money and other resources. There has already been an amazing response.
Thank you, Andrew. On to the nine letters now, then, starting with the first one with Norma.
And this is entitled Window Display. Sir, with reference to the article concerning Debenham's window display, the Chronicle, March the 3rd, I remember Mr. Cooper, who won several awards for his marvellous displays, especially at Christmas time when my mother took me to see Santa Claus in his grotto, which was tucked away on the ground floor. The cash system was unique. The shop assistant would place the cash in a container, which was placed in another container that sucked underground to the cashier's office. On return journey, the container landed in a basket with change and receipt. Sometimes the container overshot and landed on the floor. I picked it up and handed it to the shop assistant. Happy days. And that was from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And this letter is entitled Route to Nowhere, and it's come from David Selby, who's the chairman of the South Wanston Safe Cycling Campaign Group. Sir, of the three letters last week, two made very valid points about rescinding the decision to close Andover Road, while the third was merely a party political polemic. Thankfully, the editor clarified the situation. However, I stand to be corrected, but I seem to recall that ground was made available to the King's Barton Estate for the use of the Henry Beaufort School to extend its playing field. If I'm correct, then I understood that the issue arose about how to get the children across the Andover Road safely. Thus, the proposed closure, endorsed by the government of the day in 2012. My concern is somewhat different, however. Our group has been campaigning for well over a decade for a safe cycle route from South Wanston into Winchester. So far so good, as Hampshire County Council has enabled a cross-country route to be developed from the village to the southern water facility in Andover Road. Backed by South Wanston Parish Council, we have failed to make any further progress with HCC to plan a safe cycle route from the waterworks into town. And despite local councils saying that they wish to promote cycling, neither appears to have a designated cycling officer, such as the person I was able to negotiate with when I lived in the north. In the meantime, we have what one of our villagers referred to as a route going from nowhere to nowhere. It would seem that until the Andover Road issue is resolved, neither local authority is willing to discuss a perfectly valid proposal, part of which has already been achieved at some expense. No more platitudes about supporting cycling as a contribution to a more sustainable future. Let's see some action. If only a plan to discuss to start with. And that is David Selby, chairman of the South Wanston Safe Cycling Campaign Group, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
And this from Piyajada Qureshi, founding chairman of the Winchester Muslim Cultural Association. Sir, I was excited to be included by Maggie Carver, the Winchester Jewish community, organisers and county council, who did a brilliant job with the second unveiling of the statue of Lady Licorice and the opening of the Winchester Arc and Cultural Hub by HRH Prince Charles. The message of neighbourliness encompasses perfectly the principles of tolerance, diversity and inclusion. At the first unveiling, the Chief Rabbi Mervis, Dean Catherine Ogle and I expressed in a Hampshire County Council Twitter video how poignant those values are today. And as one of my mentors and former County Council leader, Roy Perry, explained so eloquently the relevance to the horrors in Ukraine. I was able to present His Highness with a book of beautiful cultural photographs and portraits from around the Islamic world. In the Shade of the Tree, it's called. HRH and I spoke about his granduncle and last Viceroy of India, Lord Mountbatten, who had invited my family to Broadlands for dinner in the 1970s, but sadly, tragedy struck before we could. Excuse me. So Prince Charles was touched that the book was as much a token in respect of his granduncle's neighbourliness as it was to thank HRH for his interfaith and cultural support around the world. On a lighter note, I also joked, asking HRH how on earth he recovered from COVID so quickly and returned to Winchester. He simply laughed and said, well, and then asked, smiling, and you're well, before walking out to an adoring public and heading home. Licorice, the Arc and Cultural Hub, were truly blessed. And that's Piyajada Qureshi, Solicitor Advocate, founding chairman of Winchester Muslim Cultural Association, and inaugural co-chairman of Hampshire Interfaith Network.
Sir, I understand that there is to be a cabinet meeting of Winchester City Council on March the 9th, at which WCC intend to sell the River Park Leisure Centre site to Southampton University. This would be illegal. This site was bought 120 years ago by the residents of Winchester and the council in partnership for the purpose of a public park for the benefit of the citizens of Winchester. The site is held in trust by Winchester City Council, who have a duty to maintain the site as a public park. The site could only be sold legally if, after due consultation, the residents of Winchester and WCC agree that it should be sold. No proper consultation has taken place. As a resident of Winchester, I think the site should be kept as is and in trust. And that's from John Cornish, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Our City Bridge. In response to Roger Davies' welcome and constructive letter, Chronicle March the 3rd, if I were now the City Council's conservation officer, I would have to treat his proposal against national listed building legislation. This has been designed to protect the character of historic buildings and ancient monuments from damaging alterations. And if my memory is correct, the bridge is a Grade 1 listed building. If you change the bridge's width and very satisfactory relationship between the balustrade height and the bridge width, it still doesn't improve the situation on the north side, where people like to stop to photograph St. Giles Hill. However carefully the work would be carried out, it would upset the patina coming from the stonework. I don't believe that such consent would be given. The fact is that Winchester Town Centre still has a strong character, which could be attractive to the enjoyment of walkers, cyclists, children on scooters, and old persons' runabouts. This potential is devalued by the pressure of increasing car traffic trying to get to and from residential areas to the M3. Over time, there are ways by which centres could be enhanced by new buildings, repaving some roads, tree planting, more seats, high street lighting, play sculptures, etc., to complement the historic buildings which would distinguish Winchester from other town centres or shopping malls, so that our successors could be proud to live, work, and visit Winchester. It has been done abroad with some success, but sometimes in this country we too easily accept compromise solutions which degrade the visual appearance of towns. And that's from Andrew Rutter, who is the retired City Council Conservation Officer and now in St. John's Road, Winchester.
Sir, I write regarding the future of the North Halls Recreation Centre. Having attended the consultation and asking at the time what the plan was for the site, I was told there was none. This indeed turned out to be true, as rather than create an overall policy for sports and recreational facilities in the city, the council has decided to wash its hands of this dilapidated building by selling it to the University of Southampton, along with the car park, children's play park, and, until the latest Voltifacci, the skate park. I question the right of the council to sell land which was purchased by public subscription about 120 years ago and covenanted for public and recreational use. Since the population of the city has risen greatly since then, and we are all being urged to get out and enjoy outside recreation and sport, surely there is no justification for lifting the covenant. The justification for selling this land merely seems to be based on the opportunity to fill the council's coffers and simultaneously relieve it of responsibility for a dilapidated building and the bother of having to deal with the repurposing of the site. The council has repeatedly demonstrated its inability to complete development projects, Silver Hill and Station Approach. So I can see that this must have appeared a God-given opportunity to council officers and councillors. However, the sale of the land to the University of another city, at a time when they have only just taken possession of the adjacent old police station site, seems awfully like opportunism on the university's behalf. I remain unconvinced of the public recreational benefit that will be achieved by this sale, largely because there has been no attempt to identify this, merely a two-week consultation period, hastily entered into after the threat of a judicial review. As a member of the public, I greatly resent having to put my hand in my pocket to campaign to legally require the council to act as a fit custodian of land purchased by the public for public recreational use. And that's Mrs. Juliet Hawkes, Marston Gate, Hyde, Winchester.
Tracing Gertrude. Sir, I'm searching for a well-known mathematician, Gertrude Wharton, née Keller, born January the 9th, 1930, in Aachen, Germany, who was last resided in 18 St. Swithin Street in Winchester for many years. She would be 92 years of age now. My mum, her sister who lives in Cologne, Germany, has been looking for her as her latest letters to Gertrude were returned as undeliverable. If anyone has any information on her whereabouts or what became of her, please email Claudia Ainsworth at claudieains@charter.net, and I will repeat that, I will spell it for you, claudieains@charter.net, and that was from Claudia Ainsworth, Sandy Hook in USA.
And this is a letter from Judith Martin, and it's about graffiti, and it's titled River Park. Sir, by chance, on the day that I read about Winchester City Council citing antisocial behaviour over the statements graffitied onto the redundant leisure centre, bracket, police to step up patrols after retaliation graffiti, which was in the Chronicle February 24, I watched an edition of BBC's Panorama that I'd recorded since January the 24th, called, quote, Afraid in My Own Home. That was about real antisocial behaviour. Someone had had their dog run over, people had had repeated attacks on their homes by youths wielding sticks or baseball bats, someone had even had his house burned down in an arson attack that spread from car to the caravan to the house. The definition of antisocial behaviour from the Crime and Disorder Act of 1998 is, quote, acting in a manner that caused or was likely to cause harassment, alarm, or distress to one or more persons not of the same household as the defendant, unquote. I suggest that if anyone felt harassment, alarm, or distress over the River Park graffiti, they are too thin-skinned to be in public life. Most recently, I see that some of the slogans, property of the people, not for sale, have been partly scrubbed out, but are still legible, while others have been painted over with more graffiti. Is that antisocial too? Will it be scrubbed out? Or does the council employ an official graffiti artist? Certainly there is official graffiti elsewhere in the city, on Cross Keys Passage, for example, or on St. George's Street. The council has suggested art students might be employed to decorate the skate park. Obviously, not in an antisocial manner. Of course, I don't generally defend graffiti, but I believe the slogans on a redundant building due for demolition are an acceptable expression of public opinion. Asking the police to act to prevent similar activity is a waste of public money and public goodwill. There are better uses of both. And that's from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And from Chris Adams, headed Many Thanks. Sir, having recently suffered an unexpected and sudden illness, I was admitted to Twyford Ward at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. I would like to express my sincere gratitude and thanks to all at St. Paul's Surgery and the staff on Twyford Ward who cared for me so well and showed so much kindness when I was shocked and distressed at becoming poorly so quickly. And that from Chris Adams, Kingsworthy.
That brings us on to now the first person column, which is being read by Norma.
And it's entitled Family Man in a Horrible Attack, and it's by George Hayter. Imagine a wedding in a film where one of the guests causes a scene at the reception and a fight breaks out. Imagine that person causing the chaos is called, say, Vladimir Putin. All the other wedding guests know that Vlad is a chilling character. Most try to avoid him, but he is a family member, so of course he has to be at the wedding. Vlad sits at a table with a handful of disreputable wedding guests who he always associates with on big family occasions. For years, Vladimir has been bullying a member of his own family, an ambitious young man called Uk, who insisted on leaving Vlad's household to strike out on his own. Vlad didn't like the upstart becoming an independent, and 8 years ago he robbed him, causing serious injury. In the weeks leading up to the wedding, Vlad made menacing threats against Uk. When Uk's friend called on Vlad to back off, Vlad admitted that he had been regularly lighting powerful flamethrower next to Uk's home, but claimed it was just for practice. Igniting the 100-foot flame outside Uk's tinder-dry little wooden bungalow was routine manoeuvres, he insisted. It was no surprise on the wedding day when Vlad interrupted the speeches by lighting his flamethrower and pointing it at poor Uk, telling the room that the young man was a Nazi. There was nothing much the guests could do. No one was prepared to wrestle Vlad in case he aimed the flamethrower at other guests too, and maybe set the whole place alight. But boy, did Vlad's reputation take a knock. Seeing his unprovoked attack, nearly all the other guests turned against him. "We won't have much to do with you unless you stop," they shouted. "If anyone pointed a flamethrower at me, I would run away." But Uk stood his ground, seeing that his mad uncle Vlad turned up the flame and kept coming. Even one of the shady wedding guests on Vlad's table seemed to disapprove of him using a flamethrower at a wedding. That was Vlad's Chinese relative, bossy chap, who's into manufacturing and spends hours on war games like Vlad. Some say the clumsy flamethrower spectacle has made the Chinese relative consider his cherished plan to try a similar stunt on one of his own family. Almost all the guests from all the other tables gathered in a group to shout encouragement to Ook and to discuss how they might help him survive. They agreed they couldn't try to force Vlad back in case that made Vlad even madder, causing him to leave no one alive. All this time, brave Ook was getting frazzled. It was horrible to watch. Heartless Vlad was closing in, turning up the flame as he went. Funnily enough, most of Vlad's family were still calmly sat at their table. They thought Vlad was not murdering Ook, but helping him. That's what Vlad kept telling them, even as his roaring flame licked Ook's limbs. Vlad's family couldn't see that Vlad was doing because he had blindfolded them before the wedding. The guests, hoping to stop Vlad, knew that he'd been telling lies and was misleading his family and breaking the law. Louder than ever, they shouted that he should quench the flame and go home. But one loud voice was very slightly jarring with the others. Boris was an amusing guy who nevertheless had made himself a little unpopular with his family. Like Vlad, he had been telling lies, though his were much, much smaller lies, and the police thought that he might have broken the law. But only crime tiny in comparison with Vlad's. A lot of Boris's family reluctantly told him to be honourable and he should stop being head of a family. It was a matter of precedent and constitutional principle, they urged. But uncomfortably, like Vlad, Boris ignored his family.
Thank you, Norma. And we can all draw from that what we want to draw from that. right, OK. And now then, editorial comment, please, from Nikki.
Headed Council Decision Over Sale of Leisure Centre. Hindsight is a wonderful thing, but surely someone at the City Council should have thought that a large number of people would be interested in attending the Cabinet meeting yesterday that decided the sale of the River Park site to Southampton University. This newspaper has written many stories over recent months about the issue, all available at hampshirechronicle.co.uk. The plan has aroused strong opposition from people who feel there has been no consultation about the future of the site. A Chronicle online story this week reports Councillor Kelsey Lerney saying there has been much consultation about the land in recent years. Allegations from some people yesterday that the decision was being made in stealth is clearly ludicrous. People must be living under a rock not to be aware in detail of what the City Council was proposing. But the Council should have held the meeting in a bigger room in the Guildhall. Setting aside the rights and wrongs of the decision to sell, we are left now with a bad smell about the way it has been handled, even if that is unfair.
There are two pieces in Belgarum this week. The first will be read by Norma and the second by Andrew. So thank you, Norma.
And this is entitled Homage to Music Scene. Laurent Matrech, a French filmmaker who has grown to love his adopted home of Winchester. A trained architect, Laurent has been making films about the artistic and social scene of the city, Hat Fair, Cycle Winchester, Winnell Rock School, to name a few. When he decided to make a film about the grassroots music in the city, he found that times were hard. The Railway Inn was nearing its 40th anniversary of promoting live music, but venues nationwide were suffering, and the arrival of COVID made things considerably more challenging. The resulting short film, Man Behind the Stage, goes behind the scenes, portraying Oliver Gray, a music promoter from Twyford, and features various artists such as The Delines, Laura Veers, and Winchester's own This Is The Kit. Laurent said, "The music industry as we know it couldn't exist without small, grassroots venues and gigs. but the general public knows little about the nuts and bolts of how it all works. In conversation, we hear about the hallmarks of Oliver's rock and roll obsession, how he got involved with music, writing and promotion, and about the importance of the live venues in nurturing local musical talent. The film will premiere live on March the 29th at the Railway Inn, being shown in the interval between two featured bands.
And Belgarum 2 is titled Butterflies Inspire a New Cocktail. And I read this as somebody who regards a gin and tonic with a slice of lemon as being reasonably exotic. But this letter will, or this article will show otherwise. A Winchester bar has introduced its latest cocktail creation inspired by butterflies. Incognito has revealed its latest creation called the Butterfly Effect. It features a blend of one gin sage and apple, green apple, lavender, lemon, and egg white, and comes encased in a gilded butterfly house on a bed of live reindeer moss, which is topped with delicate flowers from a local florist to give it an authentic touch. The cocktail bar is at St. John's House in the Broadway, with steps leading down to a basement-style lounge where customers are hit with the scent of Mediterranean pine. Owner and cocktail creator Nick Robinson is focused on pushing the boundaries of mixology within the country. He said, "I'm pretty creative. I look for inspiration everywhere that I can find it. I'm always out and about looking for different ideas and concepts." Incognito holds 21 different cocktails, ranging from a Candyman, which is served in a diver's helmet, a pearl, served in a seashell brought back from a beach in Bali, as well as an old-fashioned, which I've heard of, by the way, the Epiphany, the Hibachi, the Rub-a-Dub-Dub, and the Greatest Showman, which range from £13 to £15. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Nick Robinson with one of his creations, which I assume, looking at it, is in fact the Butterfly Effect.
And we will all be heading down there as soon as we finish this recording.
I'm showing my age.
There is only one item in What's On this week. Open Sight, Hampshire's largest organisation supporting people with sight loss, will be holding an information day on the 16th of March, that's next Wednesday, at Winchester Discovery Centre, as some of us still call it. The day will run from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. Open Sight independent living advisors and equipment demonstrators will have their latest low vision aids and daily living equipment for demonstration. This is a great opportunity to come along and find out information and advice about the services in the Winchester area. So remembering that's next Wednesday, the 16th of March, from the morning to the afternoon. Only one announcement this week. It's quite a usual one. You will recognise it. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob attached to the memory stick. Lighting up time information. Starting tomorrow, the 12th of March, dawn will be at 05:51. Sunrise will be at 06:24. And at the end of the day, the sun will set at 18:05. That's 5 minutes past six. We continue now with further items of general news.
Exhibition marks group anniversary. An exhibition opened in Winchester last week to mark an anniversary of an alcohol support group. Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, opened its exhibition called Darkness into Light, which is to mark 75 years of AA in the UK. It opened on March the 3rd at the Get Free Bookshop in the Brooks Shopping Centre and runs until March the 27th. Kat from AA said, We were fortunate to host some very special guests, including Winchester MP Steve Brine, Dean of Winchester Cathedral, the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, and Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Vivian Achwal. Also in attendance was Lieutenant Colonel Colin Bullied, curator at the Royal Hampshire Museum, who is the keeper of the tombstone, featured in the first page of the Big Book. At the event, Dean Catherine Ogle spoke about her eagerness to rebuild the connections between Winchester Cathedral and local AA, which have lapsed over the pandemic, and there's a photograph of them all holding the Big Blue Book, Alcoholics Anonymous.
New havens for bees set to be created across park. New wildfire havens for bees and butterflies will be created after a new tranche of funding has been announced. Grants of up to £5,000 will be available to help create new rows of wildflowers across Hampshire and Sussex. The South Downs National Park Trust, the official independent charity for the National Park, is looking to hear from farmers, private landowners, parish councils, local authorities and schools with land that may be available for planting. Expressions of interest are being invited for this second round of funding for Bee Lines, an inspiring initiative launched in 2019 to create a new network of wildflower corridors to help support bees and other pollinators. These insects have been on the steep decline across the UK for several decades and are now under threat from climate change. New planting will effectively create a road system for pollinating insects, allowing them to move freely through the landscape more easily. 2 years ago, the community rallied round to raise £75,000 to smash the fundraising target, and the first round of grants were awarded last year. Eight new wildflower havens have been created, including one in Prince's Mead School near Winchester. Collectively, these projects will create around 50 hectares, over 80 football pitches, of new habitats for bees. Wildfire planting started at Prince's Mead School last year. Heidi Lancaster, head of science, said, "Thanks to the Bee Lines grant, Prince's Mead School now has a newly extended wildflower meadow which spans the entire length of our playing fields. The children have watched the young plants grow, and with the first flowering of the meadow last year, they were amazed to see so many different bee species pollinating the flowers. The meadow is a fantastic outdoor learning resource for teaching about biodiversity and food chains. It's created a valuable wildlife habitat in the school grounds, linking existing hedges and wooded areas. The children are so excited when they spot tiny snails, caterpillars, bees and butterflies. They've caught glimpses of a mouse scurrying away and seen a local buzzard circling overhead. This is a long-term project which will benefit hundreds of children in the future and will help develop their understanding of the independence of all organisms in the ecosystem." Nick Heisman, countryside and policy manager for the South Downs National Park, leading the project, said, "Bees are incredible ecosystem engineers, quietly working away year after year to pollinate a third of the food crops and 90% of wild plants, but these pollinators have been in trouble for many years, and Bee Lines is our way of fighting back, helping populations to recover and become more resilient to the human impact and climate change."
And a local deli has been flooded with goods for Ukraine. A Winchester deli has been inundated with donations as city residents flock to show their solidarity with Ukraine. Claudia Sinarski, who runs Basil Leaf Deli in St. George's Street, said her stockroom was packed full of contributions from customers after opening as a collection point. Originally from Poland, Claudia decided to offer up space in her shop to collect goods on behalf of the Polish Social Club in Southampton, which has already sent several lorries worth of aid to the Polish border with Ukraine. Claudia said, My heart dropped when I first heard the news that Russia had started invading Ukraine. I'm Polish, so I've been worried about what has been happening on both sides of the border, and I just wanted to do something to be able to help. The reaction has been pretty crazy, and people in Winchester have really come together. We only have a tiny stockroom, and at one point it was almost stacked to the ceiling with donations. Claudia has been making daily trips to the Polish club to transport all the contributions, where club volunteers packed and sent their last lorry on Saturday, March the 5th. The Polish Social Club will now only be accepting monetary donations to allow workers to regroup before starting again from Monday, March the 14th. Claudia will also be taking a similar break, as the temporary halt in supply means she doesn't have the space to stockpile donations. However, she's confirmed that when it does restart, she'll once again be offering the deli as a collection point. She said, "We've had an amazing amount of clothes, scarves and hats donated, which is great, but the next set of lorries will be for essentials only. We need sanitary products, baby milk and food for kids, nappies, first aid supplies and medicine. There have already been around 700,000 refugees cross into Poland. Around another 1.5 million are still stuck in Ukraine. So tents, sleeping bags and mattresses are also a great help. Any donations, no matter how small, will make the biggest difference to someone's life." Yeah, and if I can add a personal comment about that, we took a carload of supplies down to the Polish Social Club in Southampton, and the volunteers there have been incredibly well organized. It's very impressive, the work they're doing down at the Polish Club.
Dog dies in early morning kitchen fire. A dog died in a kitchen fire at a house in a Mian Valley village last Friday morning. Firefighters tackled the flames and smoke at a property in Reed Close, Swanmore, shortly after 5 a.m. Two dogs were rescued from the terraced house, but one later died. The cause of the blaze was not immediately determined. Fire crews were at the incident until 7:05 a.m. A Hampshire Fire Service spokesman said, "We were called at 5:08 a.m. this morning following a report of a kitchen fire in Reed Close, Swanmore. Smoke could be seen coming from the terraced house, and fire crews from Bishop's Waltham, Droxford and Botley attended. One of our animal rescue advisers was also at the scene, and two dogs were taken to a local vet, one of which sadly died." He said firefighters wore breathing apparatus and used hose reel jets and ventilation fan to tackle the incident. A thermal imaging camera was used to check that there were no hot spots in adjoining properties. South Central Ambulance Service attended. It was initially unclear if anyone was hurt, and there's a picture of the fire engine and all the pipes and the firemen with their breathing apparatus, and obviously the fire out by then.
Vigil to be held at Cathedral. Winchester Cathedral will host a blue and yellow theme vigil in a showing of support for Ukraine. The vigil, which will take place at 11 a.m. on Saturday, the 12th of March, will consist of prayer, reflection and action for the people of Ukraine and all who are caught up in the conflict of war. People are invited to bring a candle or daffodil, which they can lay down in the cathedral to show that they stand in solidarity with those who are affected by the devastation caused in the wake of the Russian invasion. Hundreds of candles will be lit and laid out on the cathedral floor to create a large outline of the map of Ukraine, which cathedral bosses say will provide a symbol of hope and that even in the depths of darkness, light will prevail. The vigil, which will be held in person and also streamed online, will also include voices from Ukraine, music and readings, and resources will be provided for people to pray and take action. The cathedral bells will toll in the call for peace in Ukraine amid the Russian military's continued assault on the country. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "There has been a national outpouring of grief and concern for the people of Ukraine following this invasion, and the cathedral wants to offer a way of channeling that goodwill into both prayer and action. The vigil is for everyone and anyone who wants to come and express their support and concern. The Christian faith teaches love of thy neighbour, and there is plenty of room in the cathedral for people of all faiths and none to come and stand for Ukraine. Ukraine, which has been under Russian invasion since February the 24th, has seen daily missile attacks against its largest cities and mass evacuations, resulting in the fastest growing refugee crisis since the Second World War. As part of the vigil, a wide variety of guests will be invited to come and stand for Ukraine, including friends from different faiths, communities, so that everyone can join in at a time of shared reflection and prayer. The vigil will take place at Winchester Cathedral between 11 a.m. and 11:40 a.m. with all welcome. To watch the vigil online, join the Winchester Cathedral live stream at winchester-cathedral.org.uk/worship/live-streaming.
Hampshire salutes inspirational leader. And this is accompanied by a tremendous photograph of Shane Warne, who died last week. And the photograph is just absolutely him. County Hale's greatest spin bowler of all time. Hampshire County Cricket Club has paid tribute to Shane Warne following his death last week, calling him an inspirational leader and the greatest spin bowler of all time. The cricket world has mourned the death of the former Australian leg spinner over the last week. Widely considered as one of the greatest cricketers of all time, and among its most recognisable names, Warne died of a suspected heart attack in his Thailand villa, aged 52. Warne, a greater-than-life character, whose 708 test wickets have only been surpassed by contemporary rival and fellow spinner, Muttiah Muralitharan, could not be revived after being found unresponsive. It is with great sadness we advise that Shane Keith Warne passed away of a suspected heart attack in Koh Samui, Thailand today, Friday, March the 4th. A statement from his management company read, Shane was found unresponsive in his villa, and despite the best efforts of medical staff, he could not be revived. Thai police have since confirmed he died of natural causes. Warne played for Hampshire for 7 years, from 2000 to 2007, and captained them for a period. Speaking after his death, Hampshire Cricket Chairman Rod Bransgrove delivered a touching tribute. He said, it is impossible to exaggerate the impact Shane Warne had on this club during his time with us between 2000 and 2007. Players, members, management and staff are all united in their grief at the shocking news of his untimely passing. Warne had established many enduring friendships here at Hampshire Cricket, and I feel privileged to regard myself as one of these. No doubt, like me, many will be struggling to process the tragic news and come to terms with his loss. For me, Shane Warne stands alone as the greatest spin bowler of all time. He was also an inspirational leader and a brilliant tactician. He believed that any match could be won from any position and was good enough to fulfill this prophecy himself on many occasions. What's more, as Hampshire captain, he convinced the players to believe in his philosophy and established Hampshire cricket as a major force in all forms of professional cricket. Off the field, he was competitive, fun, naughty, and lovable in equal measure. He used to say, "Just because I occasionally do stupid things, it doesn't mean I'm stupid." And he couldn't have shown greater self-awareness. Shane Warne has made an indelible impact on the world in his tragically short time here, transcending his sport and becoming an international icon. He will be hugely missed by all of those who knew him, and my thoughts right now are with Keith, Bridget, Brooke, Jackson, and Summer. One, who led Hampshire to England cricket's 2005 One Day Trophy and guided the South Coast side back to the first division of the county championship in his first year in charge, still has a stand named after him at the Aegis Ball.
And this is headed Hares to the Success of Charity Trail. Hares, H-A-R-E-S. Colourful hares will be popping up across Winchester and Southampton this summer for a good cause. The public art trail will raise funds for children's hospital care and will see thousands of families follow the Hares of Hampshire walking trail. The route will feature 36-foot-tall sculpted hares painted by artists, including many from Hampshire, and reflecting a variety of themes. It begins in June and lasts for 10 weeks until the end of August. The aim of the trail is to raise money for new scanning equipment at the Paediatric Intensive Care Unit of Southampton Children's Hospital. Sarah Parrish and James Murray, co-founders of trail organisers, the Murray Parrish Trust, said the trail had been made possible thanks to sponsorship from businesses such as Chandler's Ford-based accountants, HWB. Sarah said Hares of Hampshire will be one of the biggest interactive public art trails that Southampton and Winchester have ever seen. We couldn't hold such a huge family-friendly initiative without the support of companies such as HWB. HWB director Michaela John said, "The designs are beautiful, decorative and colourful, and the hares will become landmarks and talking points. The Murray Parish Trust was our charity of the year in 2018. And everyone in our team is thrilled to be on board with Hares of Hampshire." Husband and wife actors James and Sarah lost their first child, Ella Jane, born prematurely to a congenital heart defect in 2009. They launched the Murray Parish Trust as a charity to advance paediatric emergency medicine across the south of England. It has so far raised more than £5 million, and there's a photograph of Sarah Parish and Michaela Johns with an enormous blue hare with sort of yellow whiskers and what looks like clouds on him.
Council wastes 80k on house. Civic Chiefs has wasted £80,000 on a botched attempt to renovate a Victorian council house in Winchester city centre. Portfolio holder Kelsey Learney has decided the scheme for the three-bedroom property in Tower Street is no longer viable and decided the house should be sold. The £80,000 has come from the Housing Revenue Account, HRA, which solely compromises income paid by the authority's 5,000 tenants. Councillor Learney's decision day meeting heard that the spiralling costs have undermined efforts to retrofit it, make the building eco-friendly and convert it into two flats. Former councillor Ian Tate has previously highlighted the problem with the building. He told the meeting on Monday, "I wholeheartedly support the sale, but it is important to point out that I have been in contact with the council officers over the last 2 years asking what is happening with the property and why it wasn't it being considered for sale. In fact, I even contacted the leader of the council, in whose ward the property is situated, last May, pointing out that my concerns as the house has been broken into. The property was subsequently boarded up." He also pointed out that the council planned to remove the chimney without proper consultation with the owner of the adjoining property, and also scaffolding has been erected on at least three separate occasions, but without any work being undertaken, adding, "And in fact, it was only last month when the scaffolding was erected, but yet in a couple of days it was removed again without any work having been done. Perhaps it was left hand and right hand. Why did the City Council go to the expense of applying for planning permission to convert the property into two separate dwellings when this report even questions why the property is in the HRA stock? This is council tenants' money being wasted, not general council tax money. Tenants have been let down. Officers have not protected their interests. It's an example of very poor practice. Councillor Caroline Horrell, leader of the Conservative group, said the council has been too ambitious in making the house into a passive house standard, the greenest possible. We have lost the opportunity for two council homes. This is tenants' money and we may have thought too deeply about this property. Councillor Delaney responded, "We have reached the point where there is no longer a viable business case. We have to consider the length of time it has taken to look at difficult decision rather faster in the future." The meeting heard that £40,000 has been spent on professional fees, with 40,000 pounds void cost, including the lost rental income. The house has been empty for around 3 years.
The cost of living hike sees the CAB use soar. More people are seeking help from Citizen Advice in Winchester than ever before as the cost of living soars. The charity has seen a significant increase in the number of people in crisis and seeking help to cover basics like food and heating. Over the first 3 months of this winter, that's October to December 2021, the charity issued crisis support to 127 local people, helping them to access food banks and fuel grants. This is more than four times the number of people they helped with this over the same period in 2020. Currently, more than one in every 10 local people the charity supports needed this kind of help. With a significant energy price hike due to hit households in April this year, they said it's likely that even more households within the district will find themselves struggling to keep on top of their bills. To help people weather the cost of living crisis, Citizens Advice is urging the government to bring forward a package of measures. This includes a one-off grant to help people with energy bills to be paid through the benefit system this April, and an extended warm home discount scheme for winter 2022 when prices are due to rise again. Sue Campbell, Chief Officer at Citizens Advice Winchester District, said, "Households across the district are already facing enormous financial pressures, and that's even before major increases in energy bills kick in this April. Our advisors are hearing desperate stories of families having to choose between heating or eating, having to turn their heating off altogether, and living in one room to save on heating. For help from Citizens Advice Winchester District, call 0808 278 7861. That's 0808 278 7861. And Citizens Advice Winchester District is a local charity that provides free, impartial advice to anyone living or working within the district.
Hundreds say no to plans for new quarry. Almost 600 residents have written to the County Council to oppose plans for a new quarry in Hampshire. Proposals have been submitted by TJ Waste for a 78,963 square metre quarry at Five Oaks Farm in Winchester Road, Shedfield. Here, soft sand would be dug up and replaced with 435,000 tonnes of clean, inert waste and materials, including concrete and ceramic. Following an anti-quarry campaign from residents, 590 objections have been received by the County Council as the consultation period comes to an end. Campaigner Steve Bissell, who lives near the quarry, raised concerns about the impact on Winchester Road. He said due to the limited visibility from the site entrance, it is unsafe for the large, slow-moving vehicles, even after proposed changes. Winchester Road itself has seen a number of serious accidents within half a mile of the entrance since the application was submitted. This application will result in a significant increase in HGV traffic, which will only increase the risk of further accidents, resulting in serious injury or even loss of life on this already dangerous road on which many of us live. Another resident, Dr. Elizabeth Judson, said, "Since the last opportunity to object, an extension to operations at Blashford Quarry, has been approved, as well as an application submitted to approve similar extensions at Frith End Quarry. Add to that the application for the new quarry site at Purple Haze in Ringwood, and there is more than enough sand to sustain Hampshire's demand well beyond 2030. Martin Butterworth added, "I believe that TJ Waste has not satisfactorily answered the concerns raised through the application process relating to the heavy traffic increase, road safety concerns, wildlife and habitat loss, and the irreparable damage to the local landscape." Mr. Butterworth said, "The community, through its objections and action groups, are asking for green spaces such as this to be protected and preserved for the future, and so I strongly object to the referenced planning application." A date for the application to go before the County Council's regulatory committee has not yet been set. If the planning application is approved, the quarry would be the third of its kind operating under TJ Waste's ownership in Hampshire, alongside Butser Quarry in Petersfield and Forest Lodge Quarry in Hythe.
Something for all at newly open Ark. Residents of Winchester have expressed their appreciation for the newly refurbished Ark, formerly known as Winchester Discovery Centre. Students, grandparents, parents and children spent their February half term exploring the new improved library in Jury Street, which underwent a £715,000 refurbishment this year. The entrance features a seating area with a library on the outskirts of the building, and a large blue screen steals your attention with "What's on today" posted at the top. Extra seating, a reception and a children's play area can all be found on the first floor, with a quiet, cosy area to study, a gallery and a library upstairs. King's School pupil Ava Duke, 15, Martha Harris, 15 and Grace Tugwell, 16, visited the Ark to do some quiet studying. Martha said, "It's nice. It seems more open. It feels bigger and less claustrophobic now. It's more closed off upstairs, so it's easier to study." The Ark officially opened its doors on Friday, February the 18th, and features a new cafe area, but unfortunately it didn't have the opening that they were hoping for, with people advised to stay home due to Storm Eunice. Jolie Cann from Winchester visited the Ark with her two sons, Brandon and Aidan. She said, "This is the first time that I've come here. It's really nice, although the area for children could be a bit bigger. It's a bit too small." Further additions to the Ark include a brand new digital lab, which features IMAX enabling access to the Adobe Suite and other design software. And the Ark is open from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. and 11:30 to 5 p.m. on Sundays. And there's two pictures, one of the three girls sitting at a table doing their studying, and then a smaller picture of the upstairs library and the downstairs reception area.
Seagrass is essential as an essential aid to biodiversity in the Solent. Beneath the waves of the Solent are hidden underwater gardens of seagrass. These marine flowering plants are known for increasing biodiversity in our coastal waters. However, they are now beginning to gain widespread recognition for their potential to reduce the effects of climate change. And what better time to celebrate this superstar marine plant than during Seagrass Awareness Month, which spans all of March. Seagrasses typically occur along shallow, sheltered marine coastlines and estuaries, from the tropics right up to the Arctic Circle. They have roots, grass-like leaves, and produce flowers and seeds. Under the right conditions, these plants can grow to form flourishing, green underwater meadows, which provide food and shelter for an array of wonderful marine life. The seagrass meadows in the Solent are of international importance. They support rich biodiversity, including amazing species such as sea anemones, stalked jellyfish, sea slugs, pipefish, and seahorses. They act as nurseries for commercially important fish species, such as cod and sea bass, the latter of which spend up to 7 years growing in the Solent before joining the migratory adult population. Cuttlefish visit the seagrass meadows to breed as well, attaching their black eggs, known as sea grapes, to the seagrass leaves. Seagrass also provides a major food source for Brent geese, which make the 3,000-mile journey from Siberia to the Solent every year for a milder winter. Seagrasses are incredibly important allies in the fight against climate change. They absorb massive amounts of carbon dioxide from the surrounding seawater, and their long leaves slow the flow of water, which encourages settlement of carbon-rich sediment down into the seabed where it is buried and locked away. This amazing plant also improves our water quality and protects our shores from coastal erosion by slowing wave energy with their leaves and by stabilizing soft seabed sediments with their roots. Sadly, seagrass is disappearing. We've lost over 90% of our seagrass meadows in the UK over the past century. Disease, physical disturbance from dragging anchors and chain moorings, as well as human-induced threats, such as pollution, are putting seagrass under significant pressure. At Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, we're working to protect and restore our seagrass meadows by monitoring and surveying existing seagrass beds and planting sustainably collected seagrass seeds. We hope to restore these amazing habitats towards their historic levels and create a wilder Solent for both people and wildlife. To learn more and find out how to get involved, visit HIWWT, that's the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust, hiwwt.org.uk/seagrass-restoration.
Couples fear for family back home. The Russian soldiers are angry and hungry, so they go from house to house and rob. A Ukrainian couple have described the agony their family is going through. Natalia Yakimenko and Sergei Rukupskis are part of a cleaning firm, Daily Poppins, which operates in Winchester, appeared in Hampshire Chronicle last week. They have spoken of the devastation in Ukraine and their worry for relatives back home. Natalia said, "There is very little food and not enough for everyone. They are afraid to open shops because they would get robbed. The Russian soldiers are angry and hungry, so they go from house to house and rob. The locals constantly live in fear and planes fly around dropping explosives." Natalia's son, Ilya, 23, is said to be safe but scared. She said, "They are currently hiding in a basement to give themselves the best chance of survival, but they run the risk of starvation. There is nowhere to go," but he is scared.
Author speaks of pride at award ahead of a new book. "It's incredible. An award-winning author from Winchester has described her success as she readies her new book. Winning the prestigious Costa Award for her novel Unsettled Ground in 1921, Claire Fuller recently spoke to the Chronicle about how her journey has been so far and what's in store for 2022. The former co-director of a marketing agency started writing at the age of 40 when she decided to study an MA in creative critical writing at Winchester University, the city where she lives with her husband and two children. She said, "From there, one thing led to another. I wrote my first novel and Penguin bought it. I was like, oh, this is a big surprise and rather wonderful. Halfway writing my second book, I decided to leave the agency because I'd been there for over 20 years and it was time for a change. It was a risk, but I wanted to see what happens. I was very, very lucky. I got an agency really quickly and the first book went into production, which was rather nice. And then Penguin bought the next one and have continued buying my books ever since. And now my books have been published in over 20 countries. Claire 55 understands how difficult it can be to get a book published by any publisher and feels fortunate to have published books with Penguin. She said winning a Costa Novel Award has been a massive change to everything. It means the books get much more attention. It finds more readers. It's in every single bookshop. And it's an amazing thing. It takes my career up to the next level. In between writing the next novel, Claire spends the rest of her time at events, meet and greets and readings at bookshops, where she credits Waterstones and P&G Wells for their support. She said Waterstones in Winchester and P&G Wells have been so supportive. Waterstones did a big display of Unsettled Ground. They had posters in the window with a big display. It feels surreal to walk past and see a book that came out of my imagination and my creative imprint in my local bookshop. I'm very proud of that. Claire has seen a lot of success being a co-owner of a marketing agency, publishing her books with Penguin and winning the Costa. Although she feels being thrust into the limelight was difficult at first. Writers sit at home at the computer and don't really see anyone. And now the book is published, suddenly you have to become a spokesperson for it and do the readings, meet people, see editors and publishers. Suddenly you're a very sociable person. I really enjoy doing the events and meeting the readers. Claire is happy to announce that the next novel is nearly finished and is currently in editing stages before showing to the Penguin for publishing. And there is a picture of Claire holding up four of her books, Unsettled Ground, and I can't, they don't show the titles of the others.
Cash grants to fund vital trips. More than 1,400 disadvantaged young people will be able to enjoy an outdoor learning adventure this year, thanks to new funding. Schools from across the South can apply for support to help deliver fun educational experiences, such as hands-on conservation work, wildlife surveying, practical geography and geology, or learning ways to tackle climate change. It comes after a new round of funding from the South Downs National Park Trust, which is the official independent charity of the National Park. The boost has been supported by Amex and the Sussex Community Foundation. Julie Fawcett, chairman of the South Downs National Park Trust, said, "We're really excited to be able to provide funding once again for these vital school grants. School trips and outdoor learning are such an important part of growing up and learning more about the world. Schools with more than 10% of pupils eligible for free school meals can apply for support when planning trips up to the end of summer term 2022. Teachers and pupils praised the trips last year. Nicola Wells, head teacher at Barton Farm Primary Academy, which visited Marwell Zoo, said, "Following the lockdown, we were desperate to be able to give our children the opportunity to take their learning off-site. Our Year R cohort had missed out on so many rich learning experiences due to COVID, and we wanted to make their first school trip a memorable one. But we were concerned that the escalating travel costs would make this unfeasible. I was delighted to learn of the travel grant program. The trip was a resounding success and only made possible by the generous support of the grant. Our children had a wonderful experience at Marwell Zoo, and it was a brilliant way to kickstart their learning again." Sue Poore, governor at a school in Eastbourne, said, "We really appreciate the travel grant that we have received from the South Downs National Park."
Tommy is happy to be Mythbuster. BAFTA award-winning Winchester actor Tommy Jessop is looking to kick the stigma surrounding life with learning disabilities through a new role at a leading UK charity. Tommy has teamed up with MenCap, the learning disability charity, which has welcomed 18 new ambassadors from the learning disability community. This extraordinary group of people, called the Mythbusters, are all living life with a learning disability, and through their work will help to challenge wider stigmas and social misconceptions about what living life with a learning disability looks like. Tommy said, "I'm proud to be working with MenCap because I want to get rid of the label that people with learning disabilities cannot do things in life. Tommy Jessop is a multi-award-winning British actor, best known for his portrayal of Terry Boyle in the BBC One drama Line of Duty. Tommy has also appeared in Holby City, Casualty and Doctors. He was selected for the prestigious BAFTA Elevate programme and was the first actor with Down syndrome to be cast in the lead role of the touring production of Hamlet. A host of other familiar faces will join Tommy in the Mythbusters, including Michael Beanon, the first man in Wales with Down syndrome to run a marathon, who also set up his own successful business.
Prison bosses deny claim that staff hid from disorder. Prison bosses have denied that staff had to hide in the chapel of a Winchester prison after disorder in the exercise yard. The latest outbreak of violence happened on Sunday, February the 27th, the BBC reported. It said prison staff came close to losing control of an exercise yard and were forced to seek shelter in the chapel. A prison service spokesman denied that any staff had been injured or that they were forced to retreat to safety. It was unclear how many inmates will face disciplinary action. The Prison Officers Association said had warned about dangerously low staffing levels and the vote of no confidence had been passed to the prison management. In a statement, the service said, "An incident was resolved swiftly at HMP Winchester by skilled prison officers. We are committed to retaining staff and providing safe environment for them. Governors at HMP Winchester are already introducing an enhanced overtime scheme while filling temporary vacancies from other prisons." The BBC reported Mark Fairhurst, National Chairman of the Prisoners Office Association, saying it was a shame that senior managers at the prison had not taken on board concerns raised by the staff consistently over the last few weeks. The Victorian prison was opened in 1846 and is a Category B and C men's prison.
Students give time to good causes. Charities and schemes across the city received a host of helping hands as a small army of student volunteers embarked on projects around Winchester. A packed week of events and activities saw student volunteers from the University of Winchester support local projects across the city for National Student Volunteering Week 2022, which ran from February the 7th to the 13th. Volunteers took part in a wide range of activities during the week, including a crafting session for elderly residents at Matilda Place Care Home in Gordon Road, Winchester, to promote intergenerational friendship, and a bake sale and chatty cafe to raise funds for St. John's, Winchester. A big tidy-up also saw a team of students picking litter from around Stanmore, and students study on animal welfare courses visited ARC Animals Rescue Centre to launch a fundraising project. The events were organised in partnership by students and staff from the University of Winchester's Careers Volunteering Team, Winchester Student Union and Winchester Hub. Nina Lazarski, Community Projects Officer at the University, said, "Here at Winchester, we encourage and support our students to make the world a better place, and volunteering is a fantastic way for students to do this. They engage with and make a positive contribution to the local community, while at the same time gaining vital skills and experience." And this is accompanied by a photograph of three of the University of Winchester students, and they've rescued an owl or whatever. But they're looking suitably smiley at the camera.
Phone company promises signal boost for customers. Winchester residents are set to receive a signal boost through the introduction of a new 4G phone box. Vodafone is kitting out the phone box in Market Street with miniature 4G technology units, adding extra mobile coverage in the area without adding clutter to the high street. The units will be positioned on the roof of the phone box, meaning nearby businesses, residents and passers-by can stream high-definition videos, download maps and access websites with fewer interruptions. The activity is part of Vodafone's latest network modernisation programme to improve both 4G and 5G. The programme will see the retirement of the old Vodafone 3G network in 2023, with coverage replaced by strengthened 4G and 5G services, meaning customers can access a more reliable connection in more parts of Hampshire. Andrea Dona, Network and Development Director at Vodafone UK, said, "Our network has never been busier. Customers are connecting more than ever when they're out and about using Macs, keeping up with work on the go, and using social media. Using these phone boxes to house mini 4G technology means we can keep up with demand and make the most out of existing structures on our streets. Adding more 4G coverage is important to us and our customers as we prepare to switch off old 3G technology next year."
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams, and of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Richards, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. When you've finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.